Chapter 30. Knowledge that could have made it possible for Godfrey deliberately to entertain an unfeeling project. His natural kindness had outlived that blighting time of cruel wishes, and Nancy's praise of him as a husk, and was not founded entirely on a willful illusion. "I was right," she said to herself, when as he had recalled all their scenes of discussion, "feel I was right to say him nay, though it hurt me more than anything. But how good Godfrey has been about it. Many men would have been very angry with me for standing out against their wishes, and they might have thrown out that they'd had ill luck in marrying me, but Godfrey has never been the man to say me an unkind word. It's only what he can't hide. Everything seems so blank to him, I know, and the land what a difference it 'ud make to him when he goes to see after things, if he'd children growing up that he was doing it all for. But I won't murmur, and perhaps if he'd married a woman who'd have had children, she'd have vexed him in other ways." This possibility was Nancy's chief comfort, and to give it greater strength, she labored to make it impossible that any other wife should have had more perfect tenderness. As he had been forced to vex him by that one denial, Godfrey was not insensible to her loving effort, and did Nancy no injustice as to the motives of her obstinacy. It was impossible to have lived with her 15 years and not be aware that an unselfish clinging to the right and a sincerity clear as the flower born dew were her main characteristics. Indeed, Godfrey felt this so strongly that his own more wavering nature, too averse to facing difficulty to be unvaryingly simple and truthful, was kept in a certain awe of this gentle wife who watched his looks with a yearning to obey him. It seemed to him impossible that he should ever confess to her the truth about Eppie. She would never recover from the repulsion the story of his earlier marriage would create, told to her now, after that long concealment. And the child too, he thought, must become an object of repulsion. The very sight of her would be painful. The shock to Nancy's mingled pride and ignorance of the world's evil might even be too much for her delicate frame. Since he had married her with that secret on his heart, he must keep it there to the last. Whatever else he did, he could not make an irreparable breach between himself and this long-loved wife. Meanwhile, why could he not make up his mind to the absence of children from a hearth brightened by such a wife? Why did his mind fly uneasily to that void, as if it were the sole reason why life was not thoroughly joyous to him? I suppose it is the way with all men and women who reach middle age without the clear perception that life never can be thoroughly joyous. Under the vague dullness of the gray hours, dissatisfaction seeks a definite object and finds it in the privation of an untried good. Dissatisfaction, seated musingly on a childless hearth, thinks with envy of the father whose return is greeted by young voices seated at the meal, where the little heads rise one above another like nursery plants. It sees a black care hovering behind every one of them, and thinks the impulses by which men abandon freedom and seek for ties are surely nothing but a brief madness. In Godfrey's case there were further reasons why his thoughts should be continually solicited by this one point in his lot. His conscience, never thoroughly easy about Eppie, now gave his childless home the aspect of a retribution, and as the time passed on, under Nancy's refusal to adopt her, any retrieval of his error became more and more difficult. On this Sunday afternoon, it was already 4 years since there had been any allusion to the subject between them, and Nancy supposed that it was forever buried. "I wonder if he'll mind it less or more as he gets older," she thought. "I'm afraid more. Aged people feel the miss of children. What would father do without Priscilla? And if I die, Godfrey will be very lonely not holding together with his brothers much. But I won't be over anxious and trying to make things out beforehand. I must do my best for the present." With that last thought, Nancy roused herself from her reverie and turned her eyes again towards the forsaken page. It had been forsaken longer than she imagined, for she was presently surprised by the appearance of the servant with the tea things. It was, in fact, a little before the usual time for tea, But Jane had her reasons. Is your master come into the yard, Jane? No'm, he isn't, said Jane, with a slight emphasis, of which, however, her mistress took no notice. I don't know whether you've seen him, continued Jane, after a pause, but there's folks making haste all one way, afore the front window. I doubt something's happened. There's never a man to be seen i' the yard, else I'd send and see. I've been up into the top attic, but there's no seeing anything for trees. I hope nobody's hurt, that's all. Oh, no, I dare say there's nothing much the matter, said Nancy. It's perhaps Mr. Snell's bull got out again, as he did before. I wish he mayn't gore anybody then, that's all, said Jane, not altogether despising a hypothesis which covered a few imaginary calamities. That girl is always terrifying me, thought Nancy. I wish Godfrey would come in. She went to the front window, and looked as far as she could see along the road, with an uneasiness which she felt to be childish, for there were now no such signs of excitement as Jane had spoken of, and Godfrey would not be likely to return by the village road, but by the fields. She continued to stand, however, looking at the placid churchyard with the long shadows of the gravestones across the bright green hillocks, and at the glowing autumn colors of the rectory trees beyond. Before such calm external beauty, the presence of a vague fear is more distinctly felt, like a raven flapping its slow wing across the sunny air. Nancy wished more and more that Godfrey would come in. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.